is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
What I can say I expect from Biden is for him to be the hope people need and for him to be the change people always wanted.
That's Asanda Mbambayi, a young South African urging new U.S. President Joe Biden not to betray the aspirations of those who elected him. Details coming up. Also, villagers displaced by floods and elephant attacks in northern Cameroon wait to be resettled. And Zimbabwe's foreign minister, Sibu Siso Moyo, died early today after contracting COVID-19. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Today's inauguration of the new U.S. President Joe Biden has attracted mixed reaction globally. South Africa reflects the questions about what a fresh administration will bring or even is capable of doing. Some say Biden will strengthen bilateral ties, but others are adamant that nothing will change. Most say they are keen to see how Biden's administration will approach critical issues like the economy, politics, democracy, trade, climate change, corruption, and COVID-19. Tusoko Malo reports from Johannesburg.
With South Africa also still dealing with racism, some want Biden to address this issue in America too, arguing that outgoing President Donald Trump cast a blind eye to it. Young South African Asanda Mbambayi urges Biden not to betray the aspirations of those who elected him.
What I can say I expect from Biden is for him to be the hope people need and for him to be the change people always wanted. I believe that people elected him because they saw him as the great leader who can run the country fairly and objectively. And they saw a potential in him.
Environmentalists have already welcomed Biden's indication that he will put America back into the Paris Agreement on climate change after Trump withdrew from it. Some say they expect the U.S. to increase economic support to Africa to reduce the number of youths dying in transit while seeking greener pastures in Europe and elsewhere. However, international relations expert Sipamandla Zondi says African leaders always fail their people when it comes to improving relations with America.
We did not take the opportunity of the first black leader in the U.S. of African ancestry, Obama, to strategically influence U.S. foreign policy. I suspect we might not do it right now because of the kind of leaders we have. It is quite common right through the continent that very few leaders have that strategic acumen to enable us to negotiate this very strategic relationship in a strategic way.
Some dismissed Biden's inauguration as a non-event for Africa, as his plate is already full of COVID-19 challenges. Sonke Nxumalo says solving problems in the American economy will take all his time.
I don't think there's going to be any major changes towards Africa, but I think Joe Biden will definitely be more better than Donald Trump in terms of African policy issues and how the relationship. I think the relationship between Africa and the U.S., specifically also with the South African, the Sub-Saharan, will be much better under Joe Biden.
Some believe Trump has left America, which has traditionally been a global leader on key issues, with no moral grounds to lecture any country on human rights and democracy. Tusoko Malo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
South Africa's in the midst of a second wave of COVID-19 that's resulting in a sharp increase in deaths and infections. The nation is already the country most affected by the pandemic on the continent, with almost 1.5 million infections and more than 38,000 fatalities. In spite of this, a survey of 5,000 South Africans indicates that more than half would not take a vaccine that could save their lives. Darren Taylor reports.
The poll included people from all race groups, ages, education levels, and economic means. It was recently completed by Comparisure, a company that conducts surveys on digital platforms and social media to test markets in Africa.
I'm personally quite shocked at the number of people that are unwilling to take the vaccine.
Matt Kloos is founder of Comparisure.
What perplexes me is that most South Africans have already been vaccinated. I know in the Western Cape, neonatal vaccination rates for TB are in the 90%. There's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of conspiracy theories around this vaccine, and that will be the society's challenge, is to rectify and correct all that misinformation.
Many theories that are being spread about the vaccine all around the world include that the COVID-19 inoculation is a way in which to insert the so-called mark of the beast, or Satan, into the human race. Kloos says concern about possible side effects of the vaccines was the main reason for people in the South African survey being unwilling to get the jab.
13% cited religion as a reason not to take the vaccine. Some people mentioning costs. Again, that's a strong sign that people are misinformed, because the vaccine will be free. The government are paying for the vaccines. Then a few other reasons, like fear of needles, and then the typical conspiracy theories. The government's going to implant a microchip in you, you know, ridiculous theories that are doing the rounds on social media at the moment.
The man leading South Africa's scientific response to COVID-19, epidemiologist Salim Abdul Karim, says he's concerned about vaccine hesitancy in the country.
I don't know how serious it is. There have been two studies that have suggested that somewhere between 33 and 37% of South Africans will not take a vaccine against COVID. I don't know if that's true. It may be true. I just don't know it to be true.
But, says Karim, whatever the numbers are, even if a small section of the population of around 60 million refuses to be vaccinated, it'll be a potential crisis.
We want to vaccinate at least 80%, 90% of our population. So if we have more than 10% of the people who are hesitant to take a vaccine, that's a problem for us.
It's a problem, says the scientist, because it could put South Africa's attempts to reach so-called herd immunity against COVID-19 in jeopardy. Herd immunity happens when a large percentage of a population becomes immune to infection, usually through vaccination. It thus greatly reduces the chances of those who haven't been inoculated getting coronavirus. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Aid groups in Cameroon say thousands of people displaced last year from flooding and elephant attacks in the far north need help being resettled. Hundreds of the victims are living in the open after heavy rains and rampaging elephants destroyed their homes. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the northern village of Kaikai.
Heavy winds blow over Kaikai districts on Cameroon's northern border with Chad. The winds disrupt a ceremony in which 134 homeless civilians are receiving gifts from non-governmental organizations. 36-year-old farmer and single mother of three, Alim Wente, is among the people running for nearby tents to escape the dust, grass and tree branches blown about by the strong winds. Wendy says after five difficult months, she has some basics like clothes, blankets, and a mosquito net, but that she still lacks some essentials. Wendy says many villagers have also received plans to put up temporary houses, but that they lack nails and zinc to roof the houses they will build. Wendy says villagers who received the gift have asked her to tell the Cameroon Red Cross that they do not have food to eat. Wendy is one of the 22,000 civilians along the Chadian border made homeless or displaced by flood waters. When the floods started in August, the government and aid groups said they had deployed humanitarian workers to help those in need. Wendy said they only received food aid and medicine for 30 days. Buba Daila is head of the Red Cross Emergency Response Team in Mayodanai, the administrative unit where Kaikai is found. He says they sent non-food items to the flood victims because their living conditions were so poor.
They were sleeping under the tree like animals, so we bring them mattress, buckets, and then we sensitize them, don't drink dirty water because there are so many diseases. We sensitize them about COVID-19 also.
Cameroonian officials said several hundred houses and farmlands were destroyed by the floods that stopped in November. Seasonal rains and waters from the nearby lakes Chad and Maga often cause flooding in the area. Officials also say that within the past 6 weeks, rampaging elephants have killed at least 10 people, destroyed plantations, and left hundreds homeless on its border with Nigeria. The government blamed civilians who moved into the elephant's habitat for sparking the conflict. 20-year-old Umaru Golbo lost his cattle and farmland to both the floods and the elephants. Golbo says he, his wife, and three children are currently living in a tent he built with grasses under a tree. Golbo says he is expecting the help the government promised. He says not even a single villager has received assistance from the government and NGOs. He says villagers are exposed to a cholera attack because they drink dirty stream water. He says villagers are in urgent need of houses, food and water. Hundreds of the flood victims and civilians displaced by the elephants have been lodged in schools. Teachers and students complain that it is difficult for them to share campuses with displaced civilians. Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region, said the government would come to their assistance soon, but did not provide further details. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Kaikai, Northern Cameroon.
Zimbabwean Foreign Minister Sibusiso Moyo died early today after contracting COVID-19. Reuters quoting presidential spokesman George Charamba as saying Moyo died at a local hospital. A former army general, Moyo announced the military coup that led to the removal of the long-serving leader Robert Mugabe in November 2017. Because of his help in plotting the coup, Moyo was one of several generals who was rewarded with senior positions in President Emmerson Mnangagwa's cabinet and the ruling ZANU-PF party. Another cabinet official, retired general and agricultural minister, Perance Shiri, died of COVID last July. Zimbabwe has been suffering a surge in COVID infections. According to the United Nations Women's Campaign Against Gender-Based Violence, 13 to 45% of women in sub-Saharan Africa experience some form of sexual violence in their lifetime. But Tech Her, a Nigerian social enterprise, aims to change that narrative through technology and innovation by applying tech solutions towards social problems, primarily as they affect women. Africa 54 technology correspondent Paul Ndiho spoke to Chiamo Agowigbo, executive director of Tech Her NG in Abuja, Nigeria.
Tech Her is a social enterprise that focuses on strengthening the voices of women using technology. And we have a simple theory of change that says if women learn or see ways in which technology, when applied to their lives, can enable them, right? So helps them be more effective, they'll pass it on to their children as seamlessly or as smoothly as they pass on religion or culture. And so for us, the whole idea is how do we show women these little bits of technology? And across our, you know, the three different strands of our work, so whether it's digital literacy or tech for governance or community, every single day we try to reach yet another woman who is not directly affected by the, you know, STEM advocacy that typically goes towards children. So there's a lot of advocacy for young girls to get involved in science, technology, engineering, and math. But there's not that much for women who are out of school. So let's say people above the age of 18. So TechHub, we primarily focus on people above the age of 18, of course, women.
So how do you find that these women?
When we do digital literacy programs, for instance, depending on the partner we're working with, we might put out a call and ask people if they're interested in certain skills or in certain, you know, things that we want to teach them. For Tech for Governance, it focuses on applying technology to societal problems. So I'll give you a quick example. Look at the state of emergency GBV movement, which, you know, TechHR convened in June of 2020 to respond to the rising cases of sexual and gender-based violence in Nigeria. What we did was bring these, you know, incredibly talented and excellent young people together. We started a small coalition, and using that network in Abuja, we were able to not only advocate across 7 states in Nigeria, so holding physical, you know, marches to the state commissioners of police office, but also we engaged the legislature, we engaged the Nigerian governors forums, etc. We wouldn't have been able to do all of this coordination if we weren't applying some sort of technology.
You brought up a very good point, and maybe let's go back to the sexual violence thing that you alluded to. Sexual violence is a huge problem across Africa, where you are in Nigeria. A lot of women who go through that are even scared to come and speak out publicly about what happened to them. So at what extent is those skills you're giving them in terms of how to use technology maybe empowering those women?
We wanted to be practical, right? And so we hosted a self-defense class, you know, and just brought a bunch of women together. And we worked with some martial artists, but also some, you know, self-defense trainers. And they taught women how to defend themselves. Again, working with a bunch of people, we formed a little group much earlier last year. And what we started doing was collating incidents of sexual violence reported online. So when we then started, you know, state of emergency GBV in June, we were able to say, these are the ways in which sexual violence present. And these are the reasons why you must believe women when they speak up.
How extensive is your program? Do you reach out to rural women, or you right now focused on maybe the elite women in Abuja, women who live within maybe the suburbs of Abuja?
It's a mixture of both. I think that, but one thing I'm very excited about is we've been very intentional with reaching out to children, which teaches technology to children. And instead, we came up with a simple idea to create a pack of cards that mirror cards that, you know, a card game that we all played as children. And on those cards, we then placed technology information. So there are 5 categories of cards that you see. And there's one that's, you know, careers in tech. There's another one that's online safety tools. There's another one that's, you know, tech terminologies. And then there's one about Nigeria fun facts, and then Nigerian heroines, because we also wanted to give them a bit of culture. And so what would happen is we'd go into the schools, do a bit of an introduction, and then we'll set the kids into groups and have them play. And as they play, they start to ask questions. And that was just level one of the engagement. So it's not just, you know, city women. We have done, you know, events with people in the cities, but we're also very intentional when it comes to reaching out to people who hitherto would not have had any access to technology or technology information.
That was Chiamo Agowigbo, Executive Director of the TechHER NG in Abuja, Nigeria, speaking with Africa 54 technology correspondent Poland Diho. Faced with a choice between getting arrested for violating COVID-19 lockdown rules and feeding themselves and their families, informal traders trudge on. Addie Gondo gives us more on the story.
The lockdown is scheduled to end on the 30th of this month, but the Minister of Health has warned of an extension if the situation does not improve. The lockdown hits informal traders and vendors the hardest in terms of daily sustenance. The government says they are not essential and therefore must stay at home to avoid spreading the coronavirus. Police confiscate their goods and arrest those violating the rules. Still, Connie Dube, a 40-year-old mother of 5, feels she has no option but to take her chances because she is the family breadwinner. Each day she walks from Makokova, one of Zimbabwe's oldest townships, into the Bulawayo city center, carrying a bag full of wares, which these days of the coronavirus pandemic include ginger and an all-purpose Chinese ointment called Tsunami.
Most of us, we are vending. People are vending. We are risking our lives. We are being arrested by police, especially plain clothes. They don't want us to be crowded or to buy or sell due to this COVID-19 thing. Since we are vending, we are not allowed. But the situation in Zimbabwe can force you to do vending.
Unlike neighboring South Africa or Botswana, Zimbabwe's ailing economy is no safety net for people like Dube. So women like Dube elude police roadblocks intended to keep commuters out of the city center during the lockdown.
I'm afraid of the pandemic, but at home, our children want food put on the table. I can see the situation that COVID kills. I've got 4 girls, 1 boy. They are all at home.
Dube says she has been using a sick child's health card as an excuse to get through the roadblocks and get into town and make enough to feed her family. Another vendor, 25-year-old Nkosilati Moyo, says staying at home would mean starvation for his mother, grandmother, and grandfather.
It's a big risk, so we always look aside and aside to look, and then we run away, and then after running away, we come back and we set again. But if we stay at home, we can't live without food. We don't have jobs, we don't have anything. But we've got diplomas, we've got everything in our pockets.
Michael Ndiweni of the Bulawayo Vendors and Informal Traders Association says vendors are in dire straits and is unhappy that the government has not provided any safety net for them. He says informal traders play a major role in the economy and should be allowed to trade while strictly adhering to the COVID-19 safety precautions.
We don't agree that traders are non-essential. You also know that this economy is anchored on the informal sector, and even IMF acknowledges that our GDP comes from informal sector, plays a critical role in running this economy. So you cannot then stand and say they're not essential when they're providing food, when they're actually the economy of the country. They must consider the livelihood of traders because most of them are suffering.
Nguyen and others say the vendors claim they have to lie to and bribe police to continue trading. But even that is not a solution to staving off hunger and poverty. Reporting for VOA, this is Arigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Botswana has seen COVID-19 deaths more than double in the last 2 weeks, from a relatively low 38 registered fatalities early this month to 88 this week. Health authorities blame the worsening situation on festive season activities. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
Botswana's COVID-19 cases have risen sharply, with the daily average now at more than 300 cases, up from 180 in late December. The country's COVID-19 Task Force scientific advisor, Dr. Mohomotsi Matsaba, said more than 1,265 cases were registered between January 12 and 15, a new high.
Sadly, during this time period, we saw a record number of 17 new deaths. That brings our total of the deceased to 88.
Botswana now has 16,604 COVID-19 cases, up from last week's 15,410. Matsaba said festive season activities, where travel restrictions were relaxed, may have contributed to the surge. In early January, Botswana registered cases of the new variant, which was first discovered in neighboring South Africa. Despite a rise in cases, Botswana schools reopened this week, but parents like Habrone resident Tsawone Sitsoho are worried.
Clearly the numbers are a concern. Liquor sales have been stopped, but to go ahead and reopen schools, we are worried about the safety of our children. We could have delayed the opening of schools until maybe February thereabout.
Education sector unions gave the reopening of schools thumbs up, but urged a phased approach. Botswana remains under an 8-hour night curfew, with alcohol sales suspended until January 31. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habrone, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barrow, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.